It was during the inquest for my wife and son that it became apparent that there were medical records were missing. I had seen these records before, and so had the coroner's assistant. But when the trust came to the inquest, the critical records that we needed just weren't there.
And when you were first grieving, were you also conscious of a cover-up?
Not at first, but I picked up the paper one night and James Titcomb's son, Joshua, died. And in the paper it mentioned that the critical medical records had gone missing. As soon as I read that, I contacted James's father, who lived just up the road from me. And then everyone we seemed to contact from then on had a story of medical records missing or the trust not cooperating with them.
Elizabeth, in your case, how much were you reporting your fears of grooming?
Well, I started to try and get help from social services fairly early on when my daughter, who I'd adopted, had been with me for about a year and started disappearing in the evening, and she was just 12 years old. And I phoned the emergency duty team at the Oxfordshire Social Services and spoke to someone who was very sympathetic. But the minute I said that my daughter was adopted and adopted from another area, they said they couldn't help.
And Girl C has since given an interview in which she has said she knows you were trying to report what was happening to her. What was happening to her that the state was turning a blind eye to?
She was being initially groomed and then later on trafficked and sexually abused by a gang of men in Oxford and Coventry, and it went on for 5 years.
Well, I'm very shocked to hear that story, but I can empathise entirely with what she's saying about trying to get through to people in authority. I would go and visit people and talk to them, my local MP. I think because you're so emotional, you're quite shocked that they don't share your outrage or your passion about the subject. I suppose that they've never heard it before, whereas we are living and breathing our stories.
Do you think you come over as obsessives? And part of the reason you're not taken seriously is because people think you're like the character in a film where everyone is wrong except you.
Absolutely. I think my local MP asked me to leave his office the first time I went to see him, probably because I came over as obsessive or just plain nuts. It did infer that I was just grief-stricken, but I knew I had the truth.
And Elizabeth, in turn, when you hear what Carl's talking about, what do you think?
It's horrifying, and it seems to be this persistence in so many parts of the public service of, you know, never explain, never apologise, turn a deaf ear and a blind eye to what's actually going on and what they're being told.
But Carl said they looked at him like he was nuts. Did the people look at you like you'd lost your mind?
I think they saw me as extremely difficult. I remember one when I had complained that a children's home where my daughter had been sent for an assessment was being used by a local child exploiter and she was being trafficked up to London. And they turned around and said to me, we can't both be the parents.
What does it do to your mind?
It's traumatic. My wife and son weren't buried for 6 years because of this. The impact it's had on my family, I can't convey to you.
Well, I think you've given us a clue, and I think I heard an intake of breath from you, Elizabeth.
It's just unbelievable. I used to, at times, doubt my sanity, but I'd worked in and around the system myself for 20 or 30 years, and I knew it shouldn't be as it was. And it felt as though I was dealing with robots, particularly the social workers. They would recite sort of mantras at me. They would tell me that my 12, 13-year-old daughter was not a child, she was a young person, and she should be allowed to make choices, even if they were bad choices.
And in fact, sex below the age of 16 is statutory rape. It's not a choice at all, is it?
It's not a choice, and she wasn't making choices. She was being groomed and intimidated by a horrendous gang of criminals.
And Carl, there came a breakthrough eventually.
I've got to say that Cumbria Police actually believed me, and an investigation was launched.
Do you think that as well as doing that, those two police officers saved your life in a way?
Absolutely, without a doubt. I was at the point of doing something stupid. I was going to have justice whether I had to take it myself or someone got it for us. And thank God Doug Marshall and Cumbria Police stepped in.
Elizabeth, did you have someone?
There were one or two individuals, and again, they were police officers who did at least get it on an emotional level. They understood what it was like to be a mother with a child missing on the streets night after night. Nobody got what was going on for years. And in fact, my daughter and I had to flee Oxford because of threats that were being made against us by the gang. And it was a year after that that social services and the police came knocking on our door saying, we suddenly have discovered there seems to be a pattern with young girls going missing. The police then gave very strong apologies and acknowledgement of their shortcomings. And even the chief constable even came to visit us at home to apologise in person. It's taken a lot longer to get social services to acknowledge the shortcomings, but in the last 3 days we have at last received quite fulsome apologies. The thing about really good apologies is they're quite disarming, and if you do receive a really fulsome apology and acknowledgement of how badly you were treated, it is a huge relief. It somehow dissipates a lot of that seething, bubbling annoyance and anxiety at the back of your mind.
And Carl, is there any word like relief for the fact that now it's out in the public?
Well, when I first saw the Kirkup report, we were allowed in a room. I was just searching frantically. I just wanted to see in print. And it did say my wife and son should have survived. They were preventable deaths. And I could have wept almost when I read that. I think relief is there, vindication possibly, I don't know, but I think Elizabeth absolutely nailed it when she said you're disarmed when someone apologises. The Trust have never apologised or acknowledged anything that they ever did wrong to me. But the CQC, I met David Behan, and he apologised and wholeheartedly.
Finally, do you have a lesson that you've learnt the hardest way of all?
I found every public body has just been a self-serving organisation who have not been interested in what happened to my wife and son in the least.
Yes, I mean, I would say the lesson I have learnt, sadly, is that you can't trust or rely on the public services, even in an absolute crisis. If you can avoid them, do. But I would never rely on them.
Trust is shattered. Will it return? Could it return?
Yeah, I think with the passage of time, I realised that some people, especially my MP, John Woodcock, wasn't actually part of the cover-up, but you become so paranoid when everyone has lied to you or let you down. I've realised that not every institution is corrupt, but no, I'll never trust the public services again.
How are you now dealing with everything that you've gone through?
My daughter's life has been damaged. I don't know if she will ever fully get over what happened to her. Being believed and being treated and acknowledged as a victim certainly helps, but it doesn't undo all the harm that was done to her.
And how are you?
I'm fine, I think, but it has been absolute hell for nearly 10 years.
And how are you, Carl?
Well, I feel like the grieving process started once I read the Kirkup inquiry. My son lost his mum and his brother, so he's more important. And we've been robbed of the last 7 years by the Trust.
And how are you now?
Relieved, just relieved. That was the goal in all this, to get official recognition.